KYW News Radio original podcasts.
This is the rundown for Tuesday, September 21st, 2021. So imagine starting a dream vacation, then getting sick with a contagious virus on day two. Well, that's what happened to our boss. KYW News Radio's brand manager, Alex Silverman, got COVID while on vacation in Alaska and had to isolate in a hotel room. Now, he's good now, and he's vaccinated, and he didn't have to be hospitalized. But what can his story tell us about breakthrough cases of this virus? We'll talk to Alex, along with Dr. Abby Rudolph, who puts his case in perspective for us today on this special edition of The Rundown.
It's called The Rundown from KYW News Radio.
This is The Rundown. I'm J. Scott Smith, and we've got a couple of new voices in the room today. First is Alex Silverman, KYW News Radio's brand manager. Alex.
Been waiting for my invitation, Jay. Great to be here.
Oh, come on now. You already know that the door is always open. You're the one who opened this door for us in the first place. And now we're also joined today by Dr. Abby Rudolph. She's an infectious disease and social epidemiologist, as well as an associate professor at Temple University here in Philadelphia. Welcome, Dr. Rudolph, to The Rundown.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So we'll start with you, Alex. Let's get your story. You've got this great vacation plan. You were vaccinated, so you felt safe. You managed to get to this destination, and then here comes COVID.
Yeah, you know, I based on the timing, I probably got infected on day one or two. I actually didn't come down with symptoms until about day four and a half. And I was, I'll tell you this, you know, it really hit me suddenly. I was sitting outside having a glass of wine, looking at the mountains, and all of a sudden I just didn't feel right. I said, you know, maybe I ate something. I'm just going to go back to my room and lie down for a minute. And by the time I got back to my room, it was maybe, you know, 50 yards. I had chills. I had to jump under the covers just to warm up. And I felt horrible.
Wow.
And I said, okay, maybe it's not. Maybe I tried to rationalize in my head that I don't have COVID. I'm vaccinated. I'll wake up the next morning if I feel fine. I was supposed to get on a train the next day, right? And so all this is going through my head. What do I do? And I'm sort of in the middle. I'm right outside Denali National Park, which is a very remote area. I wake up the next morning. I still feel horrible, and so I call the front desk at the hotel and I said, "I can't get on this train. I've got to get a COVID test." And they said, "Well, we actually have a testing trailer, sort of right next door." And they were nice enough to bring me over there. I had a rapid test that very quickly came back and said positive. And then the reality hit me: I've got to isolate here for 10 days. And what they told me was that since this was 2.5 hours from the nearest hospital, their protocol was that they, you know, bring you up to Fairbanks, which is the nearest city with a hospital. And so they brought me there, put me in a high-rise hotel where I couldn't leave the room for 10 days. And from there, I had just about every symptom. I mean, up to but not including trouble breathing. I had sore throat. I had a fever that lasted 5 days. I had cough, I had fatigue, I totally lost my sense of taste and smell for about 5 or 6 days.
This is just a stunning thing to hear, because first we're picturing that you're on a vacation, and the thought of being anywhere on any vacation is just, and getting hit with this virus is something else. I just looked it up on the map here. Philadelphia to Fairbanks is 4,216 miles. So you're 4,200 miles.
Don't think I didn't do that and say, well, wait a minute. If I drove it, not to, you know, forgetting about the fact that it couldn't get into Canada with COVID, I'm like 69 hours. I could make it back by day six. But yeah, I was traveling alone. Yeah. And what I was knowing that I was vaccinated, I had in my head that I was probably protected from serious disease and I probably wasn't going to have to go to the hospital. But I was alone, 4,200 miles away from everybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was most concerned about my state of mind in that period of time.
I can't even imagine that. And Dr. Rudolph, I'll bring you in on this one, too. After hearing what has happened to Alex, where do you think it was most likely he might have come in contact with the virus? Because this is a pretty remote area. Is there anything he could have done differently, or is that just the price of doing business if you're going to travel right now?
Typically, with the Delta variant, you typically start experiencing symptoms a little bit earlier than the 5 to 6 days that we saw with the original variant. So, I mean, around 2 to 3 days is probably likely. So I'm guessing that either on the flight or maybe around people that you were sitting with on the trip, maybe that was where you most likely got exposed to it. I don't know exactly like the conditions, I guess. Did you go on a plane and then was it?
Yeah, and I was on a boat, on a tour on a boat the next day, just a day tour. But I'll say this, on the plane, being vaccinated, I felt comfortable with just wearing a regular cloth mask. And my sense now is that I should have probably worn either a double mask or, you know, a KN95 or something better. And I wonder if that's the advice you would give people.
I mean, I have never taken my mask off when going into like grocery stores, even though the guidance had changed at some point for vaccinated people. And I kind of use a tiered approach depending on like how much risk I think I might be at. So typically public transportation, I use either a KN95 or I'll use a regular surgical mask with it tied according to the CDC specifications, which basically, my face is pretty small, so I get large gaps with most masks, and then I'll put a cloth mask over that. And that brings it up to the level of protection that you would get from a nice-fitting, like, KN95 mask. So I typically, if I'm going to be exposed to people that I don't know the vaccination status of, and I'm going to be in tight quarters, and, you know, sometimes people take their masks off, I typically go up a level. If I'm just going to run in and pick up like takeout from somewhere, I'll still use like a cloth mask, but I sort of like adjust my masking protocol depending on what potential risk I might be encountering.
And I'll say this, I mean, every bus, train, boat, plane that I was on in the 4 days of the trip, masks were required and there was compliance by everybody. But there are always situations where people are eating, where people are drinking, where people are taking it off. And so, you know, it's hard to imagine that, you know, while there is some protection, that you're ever going to be 100% protected. And so that's just the way it is.
There's really like no zero, very little zero risk situations. So,
And it's unfortunate, but Alex is vaccinated. So he fared a lot better than people who haven't. Now, in a given week, I usually end up talking to at least one or two doctors. I've talked to our medical editor, Dr. Brian McDonough. In fact, I just spoke with him earlier today. I've spoken with Dr. Jennifer Caudill for an episode of Flashpoint that we had here a few days ago. And I will ask the question of you as well. Are cases like Alex's, where he had a breakthrough case of COVID and people have been having them, is that an example of the vaccine failing or the vaccine working?
It's not an example of the vaccine failing, and you can't necessarily say what his situation would have been like if he hadn't been vaccinated. So you can't say necessarily that it's evidence of it working either, because we don't know what the state would have been without the vaccine. But I think one thing that maybe people get confused about is that when you think about the fact that some of the vaccines have high efficacy in clinical trials, like 95%, they maybe think that that applies to an individual, like I'm 95% protected.
Yeah.
But it's not actually on an individual level. It's that your rate of infection compared to somebody that wasn't vaccinated is going to be 95% less. So it's not going to completely protect every single person. And that's going to depend on individual factors. And then also the clinical trials don't include individuals that are less likely to respond to vaccines. So vaccines don't really work well if you're immune compromised. They are slightly less effective in people that are older. Now, those don't necessarily apply to this particular case, but they're not 95% effective for an individual. So we always have to say that, you know, if cases are surging in a particular place, there's going to be more people infected, and there's going to be more people that are vaccinated that are infected, as well as people that are unvaccinated that are infected. But still, the relative protection is higher in people that are vaccinated. So they're going to be less likely to get infected, but both groups are going to be having more cases.
Yeah, and I think another point that really should be made is we haven't done a good job, I think, as the media and our institutions, including the CDC and our local health departments, really talking about what a breakthrough case is. And I was sitting there in my hotel room for 10 days. I had a lot of time to kill, right? So I'm sitting there reading about how the immune system works. And I'm not, you know, I don't want to pass myself off as an expert. I'm not. I'm somebody who sat there for 10 days reading things. And that's why we have Dr. Rudolph here. But I think what hasn't been communicated well is what actually happens in the case of somebody who is vaccinated and gets a breakthrough infection and how, you know, the antibodies are the first line of defense. And tell me if my metaphor makes sense. Like, they're like the guards at the gate. If somebody gets in past those guards at the gate, there's still, you know, other things that the vaccine provides you within that somebody who's not vaccinated wouldn't have, right? Is my metaphor working?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're like the trained army ready to attack when the virus comes in. So, yeah. I mean, the symptoms that are experienced in people that are vaccinated and unvaccinated tend to be similar, but there are a few differences. Yours are actually very similar to the unvaccinated. Recently, with the Delta variant, we've been seeing a little bit more sneezing and runny nose and less of the fever and a persistent cough.
I did have a runny nose, and I remember hearing early on that runny nose was not, you know, marker of it, but now is. So I had that on top of everything.
Yeah. So one of the theories as to why that might be the case for people that are vaccinated is that, you know, most people breathe in through their nose. So the first point of exposure is going to be in your nose. And so if your immune system basically responds really quickly and basically attacks the virus in your nose, it might prevent it from getting like deep into your lungs, where you're going to experience those other symptoms that are associated with like difficulty breathing and persistent cough. The other thing is that Delta variant replicates about 1,000 times more quickly than the original variant. So it can cause the immune cells to go to that area more quickly, and that increases your basically like the blood vessels there, and that might trigger like a more like sneeze reaction. I mean, the data on the percentage of people that are breakthrough cases that experience symptoms I've seen, between, depending on the study and the methods, it's somewhere between like 54% in some cases to 79% in other cases. In the like the UK symptom study, where people carried an app and they reported their symptoms, they had found that the most common symptoms were some of the ones that that you had said, sneezing and runny nose, but also cough, fever, headache, loss of smell, fatigue. So a lot of those are what you reported. Typically, you find that the vaccine offers protection, at least in the, it didn't work out in your case, but usually in the number of symptoms that you experience at the beginning, you're a little bit more likely to be asymptomatic, which obviously wasn't what you had experienced. Yeah. You typically have a shorter duration of experiencing symptoms, which I don't know how long you would have perhaps experienced them without vaccination, but maybe it would have lasted longer than the 5 days. It might have gone out to, you know, 7 or 10.
Yeah, and I really felt 100% after 7 or 8 days. And just obviously anecdotally, not as studying data, having talked to a lot of people who had COVID before the vaccine, people who were as sick as I was, generally speaking, at least from what it seems like to me, didn't bounce back that quickly.
Mm. It does take time. My father had COVID last fall, right around like end of October, early November. He caught it at some point, I'd say it was maybe around October 20th. It was a little bit past election day, so about November 7th is when he started to kind of really get better. But he had about a good 10, 12-day stretch where it was really bad. And he lost in 17 days, he lost 20 pounds. He was struggling to breathe for a while. He wasn't sleeping very well. Only when they really figured out it was COVID had he had just begun to get better. And that actually will bring me to my next question is that, Alex, you went through it for, you said about, what was it, 5 days or so?
Well, that's when after about 5 days, I started gradually feeling better. And then by day eight, I felt about 99%.
So about 8 days in, Alex is just about back to normal here. But what about like the long COVID, the long-term effects of this? There's so many people got COVID a year ago and they're still feeling it a year later. Mm-hmm. Are there any people with these breakthrough cases that could end up with long COVID, the long hauler syndrome?
Yeah. So before the vaccine, it was about 10 to 30%. The most recent studies show that breakthrough infections are about have a decreased chance of experiencing long COVID. So they protect against, you know, symptoms. If you get infected, if you get symptoms, you're likely to get less symptoms. If you get sick, you're less likely to get hospitalized and die. And then you're also less likely to develop long COVID.
You made a key point earlier, Dr. Rudolph, about the immune system reacting quickly. And I think in having, you know, looked at a lot of this, it seems to me that what the CDC said about Delta initially, about the viral load being the same in the nose and the ability to spread it, while that is true, it seems like it's a little incomplete because of that fact, because when you're vaccinated, your B cells recognize the virus and start attacking it immediately. And therefore, that level of viral load and that level of infectiousness does not last nearly as long and it is being attacked immediately. Is that right?
Yeah. So I think because you're able to more quickly respond to it, you basically truncate the period of your symptoms. So it might make your clinical presentation less severe than if you had it because you got a quicker start on responding.
It's interesting, having looked at a lot into this too, it's getting tested is kind of risky because the CDC guidance right now for most people is don't get tested again, just wait 10 days. And there are a lot of people who persistently test positive. So because the PCR is sensitive and picks up non-infectious material. So you could go get another test in hopes that you'll test negative and actually test positive and still not be infectious. And that confuses the issue. So there's a lot that kind of goes into it in developing the guidance.
There's actually last week, our colleague Justin Udo here at KYW News Radio talked about some of the guidance that surrounds testing once you have COVID and that most people may not know. Now, he talked with Dr. Darren Marinas from Einstein Medical, and this is what Dr. Marinas had to say about it.
There is no protocol for retesting. Typically, they should return to interacting with others if they've been without fever for 24 hours and their symptoms are getting better.
Now, Alex, did you know that, like what the doctor just said there, or that you don't need to, or maybe you shouldn't get retested once you know you have COVID? And I guess after you had your first positive test, did you get retested after
that? I did
that?
Not. I just waited the 10 days because I knew I had looked at this, and I'd looked at the CDC guidance, which said that, you know, there's the possibility that you could test positive beyond that period, and some people do. And so given the fact that almost no one except severely immunocompromised people are infectious after 10 days, it didn't really make sense to get another test for me.
Now, Dr. Marinas did add a little bit more to this after the fact, too, that I want to get to right now.
For people who did not have severe disease, we feel fairly confident that they're not going to be infectious after that point. That's why there's no need for retesting.
Now, Dr. Rudolph, could you elaborate on that a little bit? Now, how do we know this? How was it decided that, as Alex has talked about, he had his 10 days? How did 10 days become the thing to where you can isolate and should not get tested again?
The 10 days is basically the period of time when there is minimal association with transmitting to others. So based on the period of infectiousness, they found that like 95% of people are not contagious beyond that point. So it's like the level of risk that you're willing. So there's some people that aren't contagious beyond 7 days, but in most of the cases, you're not going to be contagious beyond 10. So that was sort of the cut point that they used.
Now, Alex, I can tell this experience had a pretty big impact on you, obviously, the isolation for the 10 days in Alaska. And you did a lot of research in the midst of all this. We often hear that refrain at times from people who are either against vaccination or questioning it. I've got to do my research. Well, Alex, it sounds like you actually did do your research here. What are some of your biggest takeaways?
Well, like I said, I'm not here to try and say I'm an expert on this, but I was looking at these studies of the duration of infection and, you know, really reading about what a breakthrough case is and how the immune system works. And like I said, I don't think we've communicated about this well enough. And I'd like to ask this to Dr. Rudolph, because we've heard so much about the antibodies waning and that being a determining factor in whether we need boosters and whether we, you know, whether we should be concerned about the reduced efficacy of the vaccine. The antibodies aren't all there is. I mean, this is why, you know, in H1N1, you had older people whose immune systems recognized the virus from decades ago, even though they didn't have like specific antibodies. Is that right?
Yeah, there's different ways to measure immunity. And I don't know that there's a clear cut decision on which mechanism is the best, because you'll see different studies using different variables. And in addition to the time since vaccination, there's also the vaccine type and then how well they perform to the different variants. At least with the time since vaccination, it does appear to wane more for symptomatic infection. So for Pfizer, it dropped significantly down to like 65% by July. Typically, it's still high for preventing hospitalization and death, but it also varies depending on which variant. So Pfizer performs worse than Moderna, it looks like, in head-to-head comparisons for the Delta variant. So I think, you know, with more data, the decisions on boosters might change. But right now, I think there's just not enough data to support the decision, not that it's against the decision. But, you know, there's been a shift towards like preventing the serious cases and less emphasis on preventing the symptomatic or asymptomatic cases. So
that goes to the question of what our end game is. What is our best hope for getting out of this pandemic? It is not, you know, in, I think, the view of most serious people, like completely eradicating the virus. And that goes to the decision of like whether we need boosters. What is the real purpose of that if we have a vaccine that is still super effective against serious disease, hospitalization, and death? Like what in your view is the end game of what we can hope for where we can say we're in a good place with this virus?
I mean, we're not going to achieve like global herd immunity, I don't think, in the near future. But one thing that I did want to emphasize, which is why I think that we should still pay attention to the cases that don't end up in the hospital or that don't die, is that the only time that the virus is able to replicate and make mistakes and generate mutations is when it's in a person's body and that person is infected. So during the time when you're infectious, it's mutating in your body and creating different variants. And if it has an opportunity to be exposed to other people that have vaccine, then it could be developing variants that are even stronger at evading the immune system than the ones that we have. And so trying to prevent the virus's opportunity to continue to replicate and make mistakes that make it more severe for us, I think, is important. And if we get to the, basically what we need to do is reduce the prevalence of the virus so that your probability of getting infected is less. And then hopefully combined immunity from actual exposure to it plus immunity from the vaccine will make it so that you are protected, you'll mount a response from either of those. And so hopefully over time, it'll be just like the normal coronaviruses that go around and cause sort of seasonal seasonal illness. And
right. I think that's a key thing. We have these viruses, four other coronaviruses that cause basically the common cold. And if this virus can be relegated to that status where, it, you know, people might get it and it won't be bad and they'll recover and barely anybody will die like that. That we haven't, I don't think that's another point we haven't really communicated well, that that is kind of the potential end game here. I think that's a key point to be made.
And you also made a good point there in noting that getting exposed to the virus and getting vaccinated actually can really help build immunity, because there's still at times is this thought that, well, I caught COVID, so I don't need the vaccine. Well, because I have immunity. No, right. the two kind of work in unison with each other. And it was a point that I noticed Dr. Rudolph made that I really wanted to make sure they got out there.
You can also almost think of it like a booster, because you get like natural infection and then you get the vaccine. And that's almost like the booster raising it to higher levels than you would have had.
Yeah. And you hear people saying, I'm not going to get the vaccine. I'm going to wait because I have natural immunity. And I mean, I think if you put the data in front of people, it shows that the antibody levels are so much higher in people who get the vaccine after being infected, that might change their view on that.
One final question before we start to head out of here. People who are vaccinated, because there are breakthrough cases, what can vaccinated people do to continue to stay safe through all this? We know that the unvaccinated, getting vaccinated is probably the biggest thing they can do, but also wearing masks. What about those of us who have been vaccinated? What else can we do as we're now 18 months into this pandemic?
I think the non-pharmaceutical interventions like mask wearing is still going to be key, because the combination of mask wearing and vaccination is going to bring down the level of community transmission, and also basically taking into account the potential risk that you're going into, like how many people in the area that you're, like if you're attending an event and it's in an area that has a high prevalence, then you want to make sure that you have a little bit extra protection, make sure that you wear that mask that has a higher level of protection for you. You know, colleges, we instituted a vaccine mandate, and we also have a mask mandate in Philadelphia. And I think those are things that in sort of communal environments, we need to use both of those to protect from outbreaks from happening.
Where do we have to get with Delta, which we know is so much more contagious and, you know, so much more like, where do we have to get to be able to say that we don't need the mask mandates anymore? Because we thought we got there in June. And then, you know, this happened. What would make you as an epidemiologist comfortable with saying we as a society don't need to wear masks anymore?
I mean, I thought that decision was premature, because they really didn't have enough data to show that you couldn't transmit if you were vaccinated. But I think if, you know, community transmission levels are low, I mean, we're still seeing problems with hospitals and ICUs being overburdened, and we're seeing, you know, high levels of community transmission that we saw similar earlier on in the pandemic. So I guess most of the decisions are pretty much based on the severe outcomes. So how much the hospitals can handle in terms of space. But I think it should be, I can't give you like an exact number, but the community transmission level should be a lot less than it currently is, because I think your risk of getting it is high, especially if you're not wearing a mask and you're not social distancing and you're engaging in a lot of the behaviors like pre-pandemic.
Alex, you've shown you've been able to recover from this. You just ran a half marathon the other day.
I was really concerned about it, because obviously having COVID and hearing people have issues for a long time, what's going to happen? And the week before I did my last training run and I didn't feel great. But in time for the half marathon, I felt really good. And I was lucky enough to be able to hit my target time from before having COVID. So I do credit the vaccine for the ability to do that.
Because I saw the picture the other day after the marathon. You look great. You certainly did that.
Thank you.
I'm sitting here like, geez, man, I'm just trying to get halfway to where you are in terms of that. What message, Alex, do you have for people after this ordeal that you went through with COVID? If somebody's listening to this and either they've gone through a breakthrough case themselves, or they're vaccinated, or even they still know somebody who's unvaccinated out there, what would you say to someone listening to this right now as they're hearing what we've just heard for the last half hour?
What happened to me was unlucky. The risk of getting the virus and the risk of having the level of symptoms that I did after having the vaccine is pretty low. Much, much, much lower than not having the vaccine. And so I think people have to have that in perspective. And we are getting to a point, and it really has made me think and believe, and this might seem counterintuitive, but I don't think it is. It has made me, having gone through this experience, say we need to get back to normal life. We need to get back to accepting a certain level of risk, you know, with the knowledge that the vaccine is protecting us against the worst outcomes. And so I would, if people ask me if I would have gone again to Alaska, yes, I would. Knowing what I know now, I would have done the same thing. I would have done a few things differently. I would have worn a KN95 mask on the plane. But outside of that, I think we're at a point now, 18 months into this, where we are, like life is, we're getting back to doing things. And we have to figure out how to mitigate risk the best way, take advantage of the ability we have to prevent hospitalization and death, which is the vaccine, and, you know, move on from there. That's kind of where it's all gelled in my mind.
And Dr. Rudolph, we'll get a final word from you. I can even imagine from a doctor's or a scientist's perspective what the last 18 months has been. What message do you have to people listening to this podcast right now, whether they're, again, whether they're vaccinated, unvaccinated, they're worried about breakthrough cases? What would you say to somebody listening to this right now?
Well, I would say that if you're not vaccinated, that it would be best to get vaccinated, both to protect your own health and to protect others. Part of that protecting others piece is that not everybody else does well for vaccination. And that's why even before the booster, we recommended an extra dose for people that are immune compromised and have, you know, cancers or, you know, COPD diseases like that. And so if people are, you know, unsure about the difference between the booster regulations and those specific regulations for at-risk populations should go ahead and get that additional dose if their doctors tell them to. So that's to basically bring them up to the same level that the rest of the population is, because their immune system might not have responded the same way. So for general, getting vaccination, otherwise, you know, keep practicing good masking behavior and being conscious of the decisions that you're making in terms of risk level.
And I think that will be how we leave this. This has been a great conversation here. Alex Silverman, the brand manager at KYW News Radio. Alex, how can people get in contact with you and learn more about your story? Because you're very open about this, which is kind of refreshing through everything.
Well,
here.
I think it's important to be, and the other piece of advice I'd have for people is to like do research, like know what you're looking at, like read actual studies and, you know, draw conclusions and read, you know, reputable figures in the scientific and medical community. There's so many of them who are providing really good information that is not being necessarily communicated as well as it could be about all of this. So if you want to follow me, my Twitter handle is at Alex Silverman. I'm open about it because I find it to be important to, you know, discuss it and to use the platform that we have here to be able to provide people accurate, real, legitimate information that is easy to understand. And I think people generally do know what constitutes a good source of information. And there's a lot of bad information out there, and we've just got to break through it.
Absolutely.
So to speak.
And then speaking of people who have good information, Dr. Abby Rudolph, how can people get in contact with you? And if they have questions about COVID and being able to protect themselves?
I have a profile on Temple's website, but my email address is abby.rudolph@temple.edu.
And it's Abby spelled A-B-B-Y. Rudolph. Dr. Abby Rudolph from Temple University, thank you so much. And of course, Alex Silverman, our brand manager here at KYW News Radio, thank you so much for coming on The Rundown today to tell this really amazing and wild story of how you were able to beat back COVID from 4,220 miles away.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it, but I loved being here. Thank you.
And I'm Jay Scott Smith. I can be reached at Jay Scott Smith, J-A-Y-S-C-O, 2 T's, S-M-I-T-H. Same thing goes on Instagram, Real Jay Scott Smith on Facebook. This episode was produced by Sabrina Boyd Circa. You can, of course, find The Rundown on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You can also hear me every afternoon on Philadelphia's Afternoon News starting at 3 o'clock on KYW News Radio, 103.9 FM, 1060 AM, or, of course, right here on the Odyssey app. So for Alex Silverman, Dr. Abby Rudolph, and Sabrina Boyd Circa, I'm Jay Scott Smith, thanking you so much for joining us for this Tuesday edition of The Rundown.